and Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket. It's time for The Kick Around, The Ticket's weekly show all about soccer. 2 hours of HSOs on the clubs, leagues, and tournaments of the world's game. It doesn't matter if you're new to the sport, don't worry. This is The Ticket. We're just kicking it around. Now, two guys who always have their transfer windows open, Andy Swift and Peter Welpton.
Rodrigo against Jose Sarr in additional time at Elland Road. Rodrigo! He may just have saved the day for Leeds United. All the pressure lifted off his shoulders. The roof lifts off Elland Road.
Hi-de-hopey ones, and welcome to The Kick Around, Saturdays 2 to 4 here on Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket, where you, the good P1, sits around, talks soccer, and all that implies. You can also find us on our new website, thekickaround.com. For those of you who are new or unfamiliar, hello, my name is Peter, and right here on my left is my soccer-talking BFF and man-about-town and very important soccer personality, the amazing Andy Swift.
Hey, Peter, person on my right. How are you doing? I feel like we're giving a good visual for those tuning in.
You got to set things up for the listener, right? Got to play radio, theater of the mind. Andy, we have so much soccering to do today, it makes my head shake and tingle. So to help out, we're going to enlist some fellows.
Yeah.
Daniel Robertson will call in and check in to talk some Serie A. I heard some Tanner Tessman got on the field for Venezia today. I actually watched a Serie A game this week.
Was it our team?
It was our team, Fiorentina, at Venezia.
I know.
Or Venezia.
No bueno. No bono.
I know, but you know, I kind of feel weird because there's a couple of Americans on
Venezia, the other team.
So, yeah.
Is your loyalty being tested?
It was
Don't go Corby on us now.
It was awkward, okay. Sam. Right. It was a little bit awkward. Lars, our good friend Lars Sivertsen, our Norwegian friend that lives in London, will be calling in to help us, to help educate us.
Yes.
On two topics of important and timely due to our sport, which is the recent purchase by a nation state of Newcastle.
I have some questions for him.
He can probably answer. And also, the growing likelihood, Andrew, that we are facing a future with a World Cup every 2 years.
Means the landmine guys. The landmine guys will be on every 2 years instead of every 4 years.
You would think that that would bring joy to your and my hearts. That means we get to do World Cup kick around every 2 years. But I'm going to be honest and say I'm not looking forward to biannual World Cups. But Lars will help sort that out. And because we've been promising it for many, many weeks, Sam, are you ready? Andy and I, by the end of the show today, will finally tell the story of Andy and Peter road trip to Austin.
Hooray! We've been looking for this for weeks. I'm really excited to hear about your trip.
The trials and tribulations of Andy and I trying to just drive down I-35 to go to a soccer game.
I'm suddenly glad I didn't get to go to you after hearing the part of the story myself.
We've kept a lot of it secret, only to be unveiled today.
Yes, we finally got around to it today. So we're going to do the show a little weird today because normally right now we talk about a big game that took place today. You know, really scintillating action or something like that that we watched.
Oh, Watford played, so that was a pretty big game.
I guess we could talk about FanFest on NBCSN.
Can we talk about FanFest for 30 seconds?
Sure.
I am not a fan of this FanFest.
You don't like, you are anti-fan of FanFest.
Yeah, I think, you know, I think that they're just done too often now. The ones on NBC for the Premier League.
Well, this is the first one they've done in over a year.
Yeah, but no, but through the 5 years,
yes,
it seems like that, you know, they were doing
the first one on the West Coast.
Also, you know, people had to get there at 4 a.m. I don't know.
So, why do you hate fun?
So when you hear when Rebecca Lowe announces that there are quote unquote thousands of people packed in,
and there's a couple
at
hundred.
4 a.m, do you question that number?
Is that good camera angle? Good photography there. Good director of photography getting the camera.
Well, I guess I do wonder what is a reasonable Like, what would a good, impressive crowd number be for that type of event at 4 o'clock in the morning?
11.
And honestly, a really crummy part of L.A., by the way. Like, this isn't a part of L.A. that everybody just goes and hangs out at in the middle of the night.
So you can say hundreds, and you'd still have an impressive number, is
I
what
guess,
you're saying.
I don't know. Like, if there was game day, ESPN's game day football thing getting ready to happen, and a couple hundred people showed up, would you go, well, yeah, it's 4 in the morning.
Right, yeah.
So I worry that we're being harsh in judging the turnout of FanFest in L.A. at 4 in the morning.
Yeah, and I'm not – it's not – that's not what I – my issues with the FanFest aren't the numbers and all that. It's just that I want to watch – you know, when I'm watching the games, I like to hear some analysis and watch some highlights, and all that is just kind of thrown away.
Yeah, they do tend to override into kind of self-congratulatory – and part of this also makes me wonder how much NBC is aligning themselves up to trying to get the rights retained at the end of this current year, because this is really quietly the biggest story going on for the Premier League in the United States, which is who's going to end up owning the Premier League after this season.
They're going to pay a lot of money.
And they're going to pay a lot. Is it CBS, Paramount? Mm-hmm. Is it NBC? Is it ESPN? Is it Apple? Is it Netflix?
Yeah.
There's some really interesting articles and guessing going on as to how this game's going to play out.
And I've heard that NBC, they have a number in mind. You know, it's an increase from what they're paying now, but they're not going to get in a bidding war. They feel they have some skins on the wall with the Premier League, right?
Yeah. The whole thing is interesting to watch, and I'm glad they do it, and I'm glad to see that people turn out and get excited. I do think they congratulate themselves. That's not a word, but you know what I'm trying to say.
Pat themselves on the back.
Yes.
A lot.
My only one other observation, and I was tweeting about this earlier today, deals with the men in blazers.
Yeah, they're back apparently, huh? Back on TV.
I didn't even know that. I thought they were always on NBC, but they said something today that to the effect that maybe they have not been on NBC
for
a while.
Well, their numbers had plummeted. TV numbers, yeah. Their ratings.
So now they're coming back. And I'm a big fan of those two guys.
Are you?
And I admire the work that the part that they have played
in growing
the Premier League specifically in this country. Mm-hmm. It's very important. But I have to admit that after all this time and all of this level of success, the fact that those two guys have not figured out how to use a teleprompter and insist on reading their very funny scripts from paper,
they're not
on
as
camera.
Funny. They're not as funny.
Is
when
really
you read them. Yeah. When they read them, they're not as funny.
Isn't that weird?
Right. But today, I don't think they had the ability to use teleprompters.
Well,
maybe
the other ones were. There were teleprompters up.
Oh,
in
you
the,
saw?
Yeah. You could see
so
it.
So then,
from
why not? I don't
know. I don't know. Yeah. I think that's just how they've always done it for their podcast. Because that's how they started, right?
Yeah.
So I think, you know, those two guys sit and write those scripts out, and they're very funny, and they just read them.
Yeah.
In a manner that doesn't sound like reading, but when you see them do it on camera, I think it really detracts from the performance, if that makes any sense.
They used to, their social media account used to be a lot more Ted Lasso-like as well, and that's kind of gotten a little bit darker, more jaded recently. Have you noticed that?
No.
Has
it?
Yeah.
It's probably me nitpicking. It's just like going to a concert and watching your favorite musician read lyrics from a screen or
lip-sync.
A book or something like that.
Right.
Not lip sync, but you know what I'm saying.
Yeah. Mm.
All right, so we will start the show with the big game of the weekend, which does not take place until tomorrow at 10:30 on NBCSN. It is Manchester United, my team, hosting Liverpool, Andy's team,
my team,
for our first visit in Battle of the Year. It's one of the greatest. It's one of the greatest rivalries in all of sport.
Yes.
And Andy's walking into this feeling all sort of proud and boastful.
I would say Liverpool supporters feel good heading into this game, seeing as what the situation with your team is and your coach and piecing together a lineup.
All right. So
you have issues at the moment.
Much like Bob Sturm, always love to downplay and sandbag your team.
I just said that we feel pretty good.
Let me finish my question.
Okay.
I'm asking, do you actually think there's any scenario that Liverpool doesn't leave with some sort of points tomorrow?
With some sort of points.
Yeah.
Yeah, like the Man United wins. Of course Man United can win. Of course. This is a derby. Of course. Anything can happen. And Liverpool has had problems playing at Old Trafford.
Yeah.
They have.
They have.
Right? Even when they've been the better team.
Well.
United has been able to get the 3 points?
Since 2016. I did some research, okay, believe it or not. Since 2016, mm-hmm, the last 5 years, there have been 10 matches. Okay. Six of those games have ended in draws.
Okay. And no matter where they play?
No matter where they,
okay,
play.
All right.
They've been, in fact, let's see, three of the last four. There's been 10. So there's been five at each place.
Yeah.
Three of the last five at Old Trafford have ended in draws. 1-1, 0-0.
Okay.
Now, the last game at Old Trafford.
4-2.
4-2. Was it that 4-2?
Yeah, but that was during COVID. No, I don't think. I think that was in front of zero fans, right? That
was. Yeah. Yes, it,
yeah,
was.
So,
yeah,
I don't know if that counted. So, I mean, it counted. Obviously, it counts. But I'm saying it doesn't count as a problematic game for Liverpool in front of the Old Trafford fans.
Yeah, the last time Manchester United beat Liverpool, if I'm looking at this correctly, is in 2017, a 2-1 win at Old Trafford.
2017. Okay, 4 years ago. Completely different teams on both sides. I think the key to this game is that you have a couple of key players that are going to be out. Rashford, Fred, I don't think can play. And Bruno Fernandes is iffy, right? I don't know what the, I haven't looked today to see if he's still iffy, but he was knocked up.
Yeah, there's some injury issues going on. I think the biggest of which is the Varane situation, the center back.
Mm-hmm.
Whether or not he's going to be, I think he's doubtful to come back, which is a big problem.
Yeah.
Watching when they lost, United's situation is weird because they had a pretty bad defeat on Saturday that,
yeah,
we talked about,
mm-hmm,
right? That wasn't pretty against Leicester. And then Wednesday they played in Champions League and went down very quickly 2-0. And at halftime there were starting to be some boos.
What did my text to you say?
Yes. Well, I was just about to get this,
okay,
Andy. I was gonna give you due credit. Andy immediately said this is very clearly gonna end up being a comeback win and Ronaldo is going to score the winner. I replied with the rolling eye emoji.
Right. You were very Liverpool at that moment. Very Liverpool supporter.
Did you see how bad the team played in the first half?
I did, yes.
Now, on the inverse of that, Liverpool also had an interesting Champions League week,
yeah,
where you guys took a very quick lead,
mm-hmm,
and then
almost
lost it.
Yeah, yeah, and
very quickly.
Yeah, and almost blew the game. Yes. Liverpool is was away in a tough venue.
Mm-hmm.
Right? So I think Liverpool is in much better shape heading into this game.
My question is,
front three are on fire right now. I mean, on paper, you have to feel confident if you're a Liverpool supporter, but these games, anything can happen.
Mo Salah is playing as well as anybody's ever played in the Premier League singularly, and that probably is the biggest advantage for you guys, but I still am a bit confused about your midfield situation.
What is confusing about it?
Because
Thiago is not available?
Well, does Klopp know what his best middle three are at this point? I've seen Milner in there. I've seen Henderson in there. I've seen Keita in there. I've seen a couple of these kids in there.
Fabinho is one of them.
Okay.
Okay. Henderson has to be in there.
But Fabinho didn't start. And I mean, they had to pull Keita out at one point,
yeah,
to help resolve that problem,
yeah,
and put Fabinho in.
Yeah, despite scoring a goal. But Fabinho now will be, I mean, Fabinho needed rest and had issues with travel and all that. So I think it's Fabinho, it's Henderson, and Milner's just filling in because of the third position not being available because of injuries to several players. I think Curtis Jones might be back this game too. And Milner's, you know, he's old and he is what he is, but, you know, he did okay against Madrid.
I look forward to see how Ole decides to line the team up, because what was disappointing in the game against Atalanta was his choice not to start Pogba,
mm-hmm,
next to Fred. Or McTominay, probably more Fred than,
yeah,
McTominay.
Yeah,
because that's the type of team that Pogba playing deep excels against.
Mm-hmm.
Why is that? Because there's more space for him to spray balls behind to get, mm-hmm, in behind.
Yeah.
Because Atalanta's,
yeah,
always going to come at,
yeah,
you,
right?
Right?
Exactly. Yeah.
So Paul's not necessarily the right guy to play against,
yeah,
low block teams,
right,
unless you play him up high. But now that Rashford is hurt,
mm-hmm,
again, this is the Pogba problem,
yeah,
I talked about
last
week.
But you can't have McFred this game because Fred's going to be out. So you're going to have Pogba there.
I suppose, but watching Pogba try to get drug around and not track people.
But talking about finding space, he can find space because Liverpool is also
Liverpool,
be, yeah?
Yeah, that may be true too. I'm going to predict a draw,
yeah,
tomorrow.
That's what I would predict.
I think it's going to be a draw.
1-1. Or do you think 2-2?
1-1.
1-1? Okay.
1-1, yes.
I don't disagree with you.
Yeah, there's been several 1-1s and 0-0s over the last 5 years.
And one question I was asking you, too, when it was 2-0, when United was losing 2-0 at halftime, I texted you, then I changed my mind. I was like, man, is Ole, I mean, is this out now? But no, of course it's too early for him to be out and on the Champions League game. They're going to base it on Premier League results if he stays.
Well, they're going to base, I think, because remember we talked about this when he supplanted Jose, which was part of Ole's very quick good performance was tied to the fact that the schedule that he walked into was super soft. Well, if you look at the Manchester United schedule currently, November is brutal.
Mm-hmm. Yeah,
but as soon as you get out done of November, December, and the Christmas holiday squish gets way more pillowy. So I think if he ends up getting kicked out in November, the new guy, whoever that is, will start just before that nice softer run in December and get a nice and get a softer launch there. It's not the easiest schedule, but it's way easier than the teams they have to play this month.
Are you there? Are you ready for Ole to get moved?
Let me say this. Yes, if I had a good clue on who his replacement is and I was excited about the replacement. Right. I just don't have a good grasp on who that person is.
Steve Bruce is available.
I hear Luis Enrique, and I hear Zidane all these crazy
and Ronaldo
names.
Back together.
No, none of
Can
that.
Can you imagine?
No, none of that excites me.
Who do you want? I mean, you can't say Pep or Klopp or somebody like that.
I to be honest with you, I would love to see. I was thinking about this today watching the Brighton game, like a Graham Potter type, who clearly is
know,
a really smart, tactical guy. But how does he go from being the head coach at Brighton to that next level when somebody like Arteta, who has barely anything close to what Graham Potter has in terms of coaching experience, suddenly drops in at Arsenal. You know what I'm saying?
Right.
Like, how does that guy take that next step?
Yeah. Would they go after Pochettino?
Well, that's, you know, who knows? I guess you have to wait to see what happens at PSG. All right, we've prattled on long enough about that. Manchester United, Liverpool tomorrow at 10:30. Yes, you may have to suffer with FanFest again, but we'll just deal with that as we can. It's on NBCSN, by the way. When we come back, we'll review the rest of the day and look at the big teams' crews and blow out the little ones next here on The Kicker. Trying to source and track down soccer gear from your favorite clubs, especially those overseas, has never been the easiest thing to do. And that's why we point you to our friends at Soccer90.com. The guys at Soccer90.com are constantly updating their inventory, and with supply shortages, like everything else, that's not been the easiest thing to do. But recently have gotten in stuff from Premier League clubs, clubs from Serie A, Bundesliga, and even national teams from all over the world. And of course, they've got a great selection of Major League Soccer stuff, FC Dallas gear, and exclusively right now, the Ricardo Pepi El Tren scarves, which are pretty sweet. And I can't recommend highly enough, if you're up in Frisco at Toyota Stadium, right there on Main Street, next door to the Hall of Fame, is the brick-and-mortar Soccer 90 store. It is a wonderland for soccer fans and a great place to take the kids and see all this stuff in person. And also, because you're a sweet, clean P1, when you're shopping at Soccer 90, when at checkout, use the code KICKAROUND and get 25% off your order. A great place to shop for holiday gift ideas, soccer90.com. Welcome back to The Kick Around. Hi, I'm Peter. He's Andy. By the way, if you're wondering why there appears to be many, many soccer heavy-duty mucky mucks running around the Dallas-Fort Worth area, it's because there's something important happening in our community this weekend, and we'll kind of give you the lowdown here before the show is over. We were just mentioning and previewing the Manchester United-Liverpool game, which is tomorrow at 10:30, but there was lots of action today and yesterday because very quietly, one particular club that I feel like we haven't really been paying attention to for some good, some indifferent reasons, has quietly been sneaking their way back up into their followers' hearts, which would be Arsenal, who beat Villa yesterday 3-1. That Smith Rowe kid, he is really, really, really good.
Yeah, he's not bad.
And he's the type of player, his personality checks all my boxes, the way he plays. He's not a showboater. You know what
you
I mean?
You like that.
He's kind of like an old school English midfielder, if that makes any sense.
Yeah, and you know, Arsenal's had a good run. I think you said that they were...
They are undefeated in their last six.
Yeah.
And 4 wins and 2 draws.
The reason we haven't talked a lot about them is because they got off to such a bad start, remember? And so we kind of like, okay, well, Arsenal season's done. Arteta's in trouble. And we stopped following them a little bit closely.
Well, let's put that into perspective. If you look at the form table, mm-hmm. based on the in the last 10 games... They're eighth, but if you just go by on their last six games, mm-hmm. they're third behind Chelsea and City.
Yeah, so they've been getting results, and with that win, now they're in the top 10, and it kind of knocks Villa out of the top 10. Villa was in that top 10 territory, and with that loss, Villa's gone down a little bit. So maybe Arsenal is back.
They're young, and they're interesting. The Japanese right back, is it left back or right back they picked up? A few weeks ago. He's really good. But the midfield, and I've been saying this for a while, Thomas Partey, Odegaard.
He had a good game.
Odegaard didn't play.
Partey had a good game.
Odegaard came in late. Yeah. Smith Rowe, mm-hmm. And a couple of the other young midfield mm-hmm. types, they can roll in and out. There's a lot of talent in that team. And he's even getting stuff out of Pepe.
Yeah, and midfield
or
was...
Pepe or whatever.
Yeah, Pepe. Pepe is here. Pepe is there.
Right. Okay. Yeah. Something
get it
like
straight.
I'm getting all my four.
All your Pepe's wrong.
Right.
Yeah, because their midfield was an issue for Arsenal, has been for a couple years now, right? They had to really straighten that thing out, and maybe Arteta's making some inroads there. They're only 1 point behind fourth place Brighton, Arsenal is. That's how jumbled things are there from like fourth to tenth.
Yeah, there's a lot. I mean, you know, even the goalkeeper, is it Ramsford? Is that his name? The kid they picked up this year to replace, kind of essentially push Leno. He's been really good. He plays with a lot of passion. Their back line, Ramsdale, thank you. Looks, I like the fact that David Luiz isn't back there goofing off with his hair running around everywhere just makes them look better all of a sudden. And I don't know. I'm not a Gunners fan, but I do, like many of these teams, I think the league is better when certain teams are good, and Arsenal being good, I think, makes the Premier League better,
yeah.
Period, right? Yeah. And so that's
And Tommy Sayu is who you're talking about, the Japanese
Thomas
player.
Tommy Sayu, thank you, yes.
On the right side, yeah.
Quite a nice link player. So yeah, Arsenal yesterday beating Villa. Now, Villa, on the other hand, did either one of us have Villa on the...
I had them high, but I don't think I had them top 7th. I mentioned that they would do well this season, definitely top 10. I think our buddy Sam might have had them top 4.
Yeah, after getting a win over Manchester United, they've now lost their last 3 games. And I know they've got some, you know, different issues here and there.
They're not a bad side, though. They're not a bad team.
And I know they're still trying to figure out how to implement people after selling Grealish. They got Buendia in there, and they got mm-hmm. Danny Ings in there, and there's, you know, kind of a different team. And that's going to take some time to build the chemistry, but I'm sure Sean Bass and fellow Villain fans are not super happy with them in their current state. All right, so this morning we all got up very early to enjoy NBCSN's Fan Fest and all of that going on. Man, I was so excited about Fan Fest because it was the first place team hosting the last place team.
And not only the first place team hosting the last place team, the first place team that comes in as the team we picked to win it all, the defending European champion, against one of the worst last place teams in Premier League history, it seems like, right?
Okay. But after what happened to Chelsea in Champions League, in terms of injury with Lukaku going out,
okay. Yeah, I was gonna
and
be
with
like
Timo Werner.
This year's Champions League. Yeah, yeah, okay.
And Timo Werner getting hurt, yeah. And suddenly now they don't have Pulisic, they don't have those two guys. And then you suddenly realize who they roll out today, and you're like, oh, yeah, they're fine. Look who – Havertz in the – Havertz, Mount, and
Jorginho.
Hudson Odoi.
How about Jorginho?
I'm talking about on the front line, replacing the front line players.
Yeah, I know.
Like, they're so deep as a club. These are all the reasons why you and I picked them to win this, is because even when they lose Lukaku and they lose Werner, they just replace them with more.
And Pulisic. Come on.
Well, and Pulisic, right?
Yeah, okay.
They were, but Pulisic.
Yeah, no, I know. I'm just saying. But yes, you're right. And you know, we did though question why they got so much firepower. Like, is this all going to work?
How do you keep everybody? But I think playing in their favor is the compression of the games, including the international
yes,
stuff.
No doubt.
So in many ways, this works in their favor.
Of course. They know what they're doing. That's why they're doing what they're doing, and we're not.
Now, I feel like we need to take a few minutes to just pay our condolences to our good P1 friend, Lone Star Canary Mark, and all of the Canary fans out there. Because I can't think of another club who I have more heartfelt feelings for, because you're a team that is too good to play in the championship, and you're not good enough to really put up a fight in the premiership, and you just go up
and down. It's
that little
purgatory area.
Up and down.
This will be the third straight season that they're one and out in the Premier League.
Here's a terrible stat.
Oh, no.
In their last 13 Premier League games, Norwich City has scored 2 goals.
Yeah, that's terrible.
Mason Mount has scored 3 goals.
Ouch.
Against them.
Against them. Not total, just against them.
And when you really feel like things can't go worse, everything went wrong. Not only getting 7 scored on you today, you got a red card, you got a PK called on a handball for a guy falling down, and then you save the PK, and you have to retake it because your keeper steps off the line.
Only to have Mason Mount be the one that scores it. It's like Chelsea said, okay, Norwich, you get to have all the goals you scored the last 13 games, and only the goals that Mason Mount scores today will count. And let's see who wins.
Yeah.
And they still won 3-2.
I do find it funny that Chelsea fans were a little bit hesitant, thinking this was a trapdoor game. And I could see that to a degree, especially considering the injuries and all of that. But you ended up blowing it out today 7-0, which is one of the bigger discrepancies in score lines in the history of the Premier League.
No, come on. There's like 6 or 7 games that are
more than 7 goals.
Yes, there's like 3 or 4 that have been 8. That have been 8.
Three.
A couple that have been 9. No.
Okay.
1, 2, 3, 4, 5 that have been 8, and 2 that have been 9.
5.
5 and 2, 7.
There are literally hundreds of games
played, Norwich,
every season.
Chin up.
Only
come on.
5.
Trying to make our buddies feel good.
Okay. Thank you, Andy. You're a good friend. I do feel like we need to spend just a few minutes also providing some sympathy and condolences to our producer, Sam, whose Everton today finally decided to turn on Rafa Benitez as they were hosting Watford. Now, remember, Watford is the team that lost 5-0 last week to Liverpool. And I don't know where this game went wrong for you guys. You were winning.
That happened. That's where it went wrong.
Weren't you up 2-1 at one point?
Yes, and then everything went wrong.
What I want to know is, when you were up 2-1, and even when it was 2-2, you're playing at home.
Correct.
Watford had possession and was going for that third goal.
Yeah,
after they drew, how do you not turn it around and then you know, try to get that? You're at home.
It turns out Watford wanted to win more today. That really seems to be the case, and their players played like they wanted to win more today, which is really concerning.
That's a damning criticism,
and
sir.
Here's the thing, too. I think I'm done with Rafa already. I think I'm out on Rafa already.
They wanted him more than we did.
Is he a Scouser plant?
I don't think he's a plant. I just don't think he's very good, and I don't really like how he's approaching team selection right now. If he starts to the youth candidates, like he should be. Like, if we're going to lose, let's at least play the young kids instead of playing washed-up strikers in false nine positions.
2 weeks is all it took from, man, this is great. We're top 4. Well,
it's been like a month, actually, where they've been mediocre.
Claudio Ranieri had a good result after a terrible debut. They end up beating Everton 5-2 today. Leeds United, in the last waning seconds of the game, get a penalty kick at home to hold off Wolverhampton.
Did you watch that game at all?
I watched that Joe Gelhardt kid.
Oh, my God.
He is amazing.
So good. Those last 10-15 minutes at Leeds.
That drive where he takes the ball from midfield and drives into the penalty area to get the PK call was top notch.
He almost scored the winner at the end. Yeah.
Yeah, he did. That was really,
impressive.
Really good. By the way, this stat blew my mind. If Wolves had won today, this would have been the first time they had won 4 straight in a top-flight league since 1972.
Whoa. Really?
But that didn't happen. Leeds won. Wolves won. Crystal Palace ended up drawing against Newcastle United despite having 73% of the possession. It was a Callum Wilson bicycle kick late in the game that ended up getting Newcastle the draw. We'll talk more about Newcastle here in a second. And Southampton and Josh's Burnley stuck it at two. And your favorite new player, Mr. M. Cornet.
Yeah.
Okay,
he's the only bright spot on the team right now, I think.
There's some really good Burnley insight from our board operator.
I didn't watch today's game, if I'm being totally honest.
And I didn't watch today's
game. Is it because they're in the relegation zone that you didn't watch and you just
Is this also because you're leaving our show and you're not going to do this anymore and you're just going to give up on soccer
totals? I will keep watching soccer even after I'm gone.
You know we're just going to blindly call you on Saturdays and expect Burnley road reports from you.
I'll just send me a clean feed link.
Okay. Southampton, I'm worried about Hasenhüttl.
I picked
they were
the
down
1-0.
They fought back to make it 2-1, and then they give up the tying goal in the 57th, and they're down like in 16th place. That's not a good sign.
No.
And then the last game of the day was an absolute snoozer. Surprising, because I think Brighton is so much better than this, but boy, did they show their ass at home today in losing to Manchester City 4-1. I really thought Brighton was better than this, but City was significantly better.
Yeah, they were a machine. It made for a boring game. And City's now in second now, pending Liverpool's result tomorrow. So City's back. They never really went away.
The other games tomorrow at 8 in the morning, Brentford and Leicester. That actually looks to be a good game because Brentford is good at home. Leicester still, after coming off the big win against Manchester United last weekend, have something to prove. West Ham United is hosting Tottenham. And then, of course, the big one, United and Liverpool at 10:30. All right, when we come back, we'll dial up the internet, get Lars Siverston on, and talk about this Newcastle thing next year on the Kick Around. If you were watching NBC's Fan Fest, you probably spotted the guy dressed up as Ted Lasso. Did you see him?
I did not.
At a distance, it was a really good look. And when it got up close, he didn't look as much like Ted Lasso.
Note, I wasn't watching the FanFest closely.
Oh, that's right. You don't like FanFest. But speaking of Ted Lasso, don't forget our friends at E6 Sports are offering for sale Ted Lasso Richmond AFC home and away kits with Season 2 accurate sponsorship banter. Because who would want to buy air on your shirt?
So last season, I am wearing one of these fine
Kick around shirts.
Yeah. Too, so you that can, we were provided very good material.
You can find those on our website along with the kick around gear, thekickaround.com. All right, now live via the miracle of the internet, as Mike Reiner used to call it, our good friend live from London, England, Lars Siverston. Hello again, Lars.
Hey guys.
Oh, you sound like you're right here.
God, it's like you're standing right in between Andy and me.
I'm excited about the Ted Lasso news, but I wonder, what if you want to be edgy and have the sort of Air Dubai shirts just to show that you're an old school Lasso head?
I like the way you think,
Lars.
There's
no way for this.
Because you don't care about human rights and stuff like that?
Oh, we'll get on to that in a minute. But
it's the topic du jour in segment three, Lars.
Yes, it is.
Yeah, that's, Lars, so much of this has been going on with the takeover of Newcastle and the fact that it is somehow related to Saudi Arabia and what that means. And I really am interested in the perspective of what, you know, we can read about it over here in the States, but I'm really interested in hearing your point of view as somebody that covers the league and lives over there. How is this flying in general with people?
Not well. And the thing that's tricky to separate, I suppose, is how much of the criticism, I mean, I'm sure a lot of hardcore Newcastle fans will argue that the criticism is just jealousy. In fact, I've seen many of them argue that on social media. But I do think for a lot of people, Saudi Arabia is sort of where you have to draw the line with regards to investors in the league. Now, I think to fully get our heads around this, I want to go back a little bit, and I'll try to be brief. You know, I struggle with that. But historically in the UK, football clubs have tended to be owned by local industrialists. That's usually the way. A local factory owner, a local business person.
Cobblers. And hatters.
Who either just loves football and is happy to lose a few, you know, lose some money every year on that, or he wants to elevate his social status, you know, and to give something back to the town, and there's nothing wrong with that. Owning the local football club was never something you made money from. That wasn't even an issue. And for a long time, there was a law that forbid you to take money out of the club. But again, it wasn't really relevant. But then, of course, as the game developed, became more popular, became more commercialized, money in the game went up. They had to have some rules for who could own football clubs, because there's a risk now with the amount of money flowing around that people could own the clubs for the wrong reasons, try to extract money from the game, enrich themselves at the cost of the football team, which should serve the local community. And they drew up some rules. I think it was recently retitled. For many years, it was called the Fit and Proper Persons Test.
Which is a really ridiculous name for such a thing, by the way.
Very British, isn't it?
It is,
fit
yes.
And proper, yes. and if you read the criteria, it's all about it's mainly your personal finances. You know, have you gone bankrupt? Are you about to be declared bankrupt as an individual? You know, have you run clubs into the ground before? You know, and it's clear that these rules were designed to keep out the sort of most sort of suspicious, the local used car salesman. Yeah. What they hadn't anticipated and what they haven't adjusted for is the fact that the Premier League is now not so much the top division for football in England. It's a global brand. Hey, we're talking about it on a Texan radio station, for God's sake. You know, it's a global brand now. And that has opened them up to some new challenges and some new problems that I just don't think they've fully gotten their heads around. One of the things was someone like Roman Abramovich turning up at Chelsea. And perhaps more should have been made of the source of his money and this sort of thing and how, what he did to get that money. But that was close enough to the historical tradition of ownership in this country. Like, we're used to having the local rich man own a club. Here you have a global rich man who has even more money than before on the club. I guess this is normal now. But what we're seeing, first with Manchester City and now with Saudi Arabia, is that you're seeing effectively nation states buy either directly or through an intermediary, buy into a football club with the idea of showing their largesse, showing how fantastic they are. It's a phrase that's being used a lot. It's sports washing. Another word for it is image laundering. And it's not a new concept in the world. I mean, if you go back and look at who's hosted the Olympics over the years, you'll find some tremendous examples. But it's clear that you have now actors who are involved in football in large part, not because they want to serve the local community or because they have any attachment to it, but because they want to use the sort of glory and popularity of the sport to make themselves look better. And when these are people like the Saudi Arabian state, which effectively own Newcastle now, who have a very long list of human rights concerns, to put it extremely mildly, that is a problem for the league that I don't think anyone's ever gotten their heads around, because it hasn't really been an issue before. Like, in the 70s, there was no concern that Idi Amin might buy Luton Town.
Yeah, right.
Like, I mean, it just is a completely weird thing that doesn't make any sense. But this is where we are now.
So, Lars, a lot of these executives that voted yes to allow this, right, at the league level, I guess, at the government level, not sure, but clearly at the league level, have also been individuals that have railed against the FIFA World Cup in 2022 in Qatar because of the human rights issues and blah, blah, blah. And now, in turn, they okayed and they green-lighted the sale. What is their public comment about this? Because this really is two-faced, right, in a way?
Well, this is where the Premier League is slightly different. There isn't a need for the other club owners to vote for anything here. So the consortium who has bought Newcastle, let's be very clear on this, is 80% of Newcastle has been bought by the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund, which the Premier League insists they've had assurances are not, you know, directly connected to the Saudi state.
Except
they just
somebody's
to
brother
be,
runs it or something.
Well,
like that.
The chairman is the Crown Prince, Mohammed bin Salman, who is the de facto leader of the country. And on the board of the Saudi Sovereign Investment Fund, out of nine board members, six are government ministers. And you had the finance minister of the country talking, referring to we investing in Newcastle. It's nonsense that this
so,
is separate
so, wait,
from Saudi
hold
state.
On, because it we should be clear. When they say it's not part of Saudi Arabia, they're just bald-faced lying to everybody, right?
I think I will go far enough to say that it's the sovereign wealth fund. It's the public oil. It's where they're putting their oil money. We have this in Norway as well. It's the state oil fund, basically,
right.
And it is completely connected to the Saudi state. Now the point is, there's no rules. I mean, this fit and proper persons test doesn't really cover things like, Are you connected to a state which, you know, put gay people in prison? I mean, there's nothing in the fit and proper persons. You know, is the club being bought by a state where there are still public beheadings?
Okay.
Like, there's really nothing in the fit and proper persons test about this. I'm sorry, this is slightly dicey stuff for radio, but this is true. Any report by Amnesty International, if you want.
You're all right on all that stuff, and we could spend a lot of time talking about it. But what I really want to talk about is the inverse of this, which is the Newcastle fan, and I know a few of them, and I think initially they were all kind of torn over it. But by and large, because Mike Ashley was such a terrible owner for almost 15 years, he was so bad that I do think there is a substantial majority of the Newcastle fan base that have just decided, screw it, we're excited about the opportunity to compete against the Man Cities, the Liverpools, the Man U's, and the Chelsea's of the world, which is certainly their future in the next few years, right?
Yes, but the reason I zoom in on the league's responsibility is that I feel really sorry for Newcastle fans. They've been put in a position no sports fan should ever be put in. The dilemma they're facing now, if they're honest with themselves and honest about the situation, is that there's a sliding scale here, which on the one hand, you know, you can on the one hand turn your back on the club, which no one wants to do. You know, it's emotionally probably not possible to do. And then in the other extreme, you can become a willing extra, a useful idiot, you know, a blissful extra in a Saudi PR project. And there's a sliding scale between those two extremes. And every Newcastle fan now on an individual level has to find where they belong on that scale. And I think that's a terrible conundrum to put a sports fan in. This is not what we don't want to even have to deal with this. Now, I'm sure, yes, you're right, a lot of fans are feeling, because they've had some lean years under Mike Ashley, they're entitled to be happy, and bad things that happen in Saudi Arabia are nothing to do with them. There are a lot of people who will take that approach, but there are also a lot of people who are very, very deeply conflicted. Now, the people who are conflicted won't shout quite as loudly on social media, I suspect, so you can get the impression that everyone's entirely in favor of this, but I think it's worth remembering there are a lot of Newcastle fans who are struggling with this and are struggling to know where to position themselves right now and what this means.
All right. So how this also ties into, because I do feel like this is, along with other things, indicators that our sport is changing in many, many ways at the base level that I think at least bother me, which is including this idea that sometime in early December, the people that run FIFA are going to shoehorn in a vote at the Congress that will then allow us to enjoy a World Cup every 2 years. And I mean that, I don't mean that sincerely. And I'm, do you understand how they're about to pull off this great heist?
Well, the interesting point, if we're going to go into the nitty gritty of how they're pulling off the great heist, is how much of a say the confederations, UEFA, the South American Confederation, the bigger countries will have in this, because of course FIFA is one country, one vote, and it's been suggested that Gianni Infantino may have the votes, but the votes he has isn't necessarily the countries that run football, if you know what I'm saying.
I think it's important for listeners to understand that England's vote as a federation is equal to the to Jamaica's vote or El Salvador's vote.
Brazil's vote is equal to that of Liechtenstein. The US's vote is equal to that of Andorra. It's problematic in my opinion. It can be anyway. Now, I think taking a step back, when people think about FIFA, we often think of this sort of huge, possibly evil world government of football. That's certainly the press they get. Interestingly, FIFA is a much smaller organization than I think people appreciate, and FIFA have very few, surprisingly few, sources of income. Now, and the once every 4 year World Cup, in each World Cup cycle, every 4 years, the World Cup represents something like 90% of their income. 90% of the entire organization's income, give or take, comes from things related to the hosting of the World Cup finals and the media rights and all of this. Now, if you are an organization and all your money comes from an event that you host every 4 years, you would probably also try to convince people that it's a good idea to host it every 2 years.
Totally makes sense.
Yeah, Lars, have you heard if that proposal includes the limiting of number of teams that compete, because it's going to increase to 48. Will that then come back down to 32, or are we going to keep it at 48 every 2 years? Do you know?
I think these things are entirely up in the air for now. Gianni Infantino was even airing the suggestion that maybe maybe it could be so that if you win it, you can't partake in the next one. You have some sort of rotational system.
You know what I think they should do, Lars? 64 teams every 2 years, single elimination. You lose, you're out, like the NCAA basketball tournament.
That would be pretty wild.
It would
be
wild.
What it is FIFA want to, at their big money spinning event, they want to have it twice as often. And the other thing, there's a hint of a land grab here from FIFA as well. Because again, FIFA are, a lot of people see them as this giant global evil organization. Actually, I think if you're FIFA, you look at UEFA, who are technically a subordinate of yours, it's the European Confederation, and think, the Euros is now a very huge global event as well. The Champions League that they get to have every year is the biggest club competition in the world, and they're feeling actually we're losing a bit of power here. We're not the biggest dogs in football admin, and I do wonder if FIFA, they've been under Infantino's watch, they've been trying to revamp the World Club Championship and make that a thing that they wanted. They have expanded the World Cup, as you mentioned. They want to do the World Cup more often. It's clear that Infantino wants FIFA to play a much bigger role in world football and to be much more present.
Well, and we haven't even gotten into the dark conversation of the return of the Super League, which is lurking out in the shadows somewhere. They're still trying to put that monster together. All right, Lars Severtsen live from London. Lars, as always, thank you so much for your smarts and insight and your time, sir. We love having you on the show.
Anytime, sir.
All right, when we come back, we will get back on the internet and talk to Daniel about Serie A next here on the Kick Around. Thanks again to Lars Severtsen for helping out and joining in. We love talking to that guy.
One question I was going to have for him. What if Newcastle goes down this year? I guess they'll just pump money anyway and come right back up.
I've assumed they're going to pump so much money into it in July. January, that by the time we get to the end of the season, they'll be in the top half of the table. You watch. Something like that. All right. It's time to put on our pizza-making hats. And our accents, and talk to Daniel Robertson about all things Serie A. Hello, Daniel.
Buongiorno, ragazzi. Buongiorno.
Daniel, I have a question for you.
I think
Italians would be offended that they think, like, that Peter thinks the only food they have is pizza.
Hey, I was at Italy last night. I had a delicious agnolotti del Plin. Delicious. Go there. It'll pizza, it'll pasta on the bottom floor, the agnolotti. Try it. You won't be disappointed.
It's good stuff. I agree.
Hey, we're going to talk both about Napoli and Roma when we talk soccer with you here in a second, but important things first. Since we're going to talk about those two cities and their clubs, are you Napoli pizza or are you Roman pizza? Because you're one or the other. You can't be both.
Oof. No, when you've got to go Neapolitan for the pizza and
high five.
The cacio e pepe for Rome. Pasta.
Well done.
Rome,
you will fit in here, brother. We are with you.
Now, for those unfamiliar, Daniel joins us. Daniel used to work for FC Dallas, left, and ended up working social media in Turin, Italy for Juventus for a period of time. Him and his wife moved over there, and now they're back here stateside. But he does follow the league, so we've employed his services. Employed like I'm paying you to do this.
I got a T-shirt.
You did get a T-shirt. You got anything to plug, Daniel? Do you want to plug anything?
No, let's just plug Serie A.
Okay.
Let's just plug Serie A.
All right, so I do think the story that you're most itching to talk about is the wonderfulness of one Napoli, speaking of which.
Well, there is one team in the top five leagues in Europe that still keeps a perfect record. It's not Bayern. It's not Real Madrid. It's not PSG.
It's not
with
City.
Messi,
not Liverpool.
And Neymar. It's not City. It is Napoli. 24 points from 8 games, 8-0-0 this season. They're flying high. They're getting it done by hook or crook. And right now, they're the only undefeated team left in Europe.
Now, wait. So I'm going to assume, just because you worked for them, Juventus remains your club of choice in Italy?
Yes. Yeah. I mean, I think on my, unfortunately, on my most hated teams in sports, it's Texas Longhorns 1, Napoli 2.
Wow.
You know,
okay.
Look, I went in a little nuclear there for a second. But no, I'm not a Napoli fan. I'm a big Juventus fan. I watch every game. Big game tomorrow against Inter, but you have to respect what Napoli's doing right now. I mean, they're playing great football, and they probably have the best forward in Europe that you've never heard of.
Who's okay. that?
Who yep. would that be?
So that is going to be Victor Osimhen. He's a Nigerian forward. They bought him last year from Lille, who was playing so well in France. They won the French title. They paid almost 70 million euros for him, which, look, I mean, for Napoli, that's a huge amount of money. Last season, he struggled with injuries. He got COVID, and it was really a stop-start season for him. But this year, he's been healthy. He's been playing well. He got healthy at the end of last season. He has 11 goals in his last 15 Serie A games. He is right now probably, if you're thinking about who is a forward out there that Newcastle could go pay 120 million euros for, it might be this guy.
Correct. Guilty as charged. I do not know who that guy is, but I will now watch out for him.
I'm looking at his wiki page, Robert. I know about him. Thank you.
He's 22 years old. Look at the goal he scored last weekend. It was a ball bouncing around in the box. He skies about 10 feet up in the air, heads it in to keep the unbeaten record. This is a guy you want to keep your eye on.
He looks imposing from his picture.
And by the way, Luciano Spalletti, their coach, said after the game, he would choose Osimhen ahead of Mbappe.
Whoa! Now,
of course, the coach has to say that, right?
Right.
But, hey, still good praise.
All right. Now, part of the reason why we decided to start covering Serie A and Bundesliga on the show on the regular is because the number of Americans playing in Serie A specifically and in Germany. One of the stories that I find interesting is the fact that Brian Reynolds from FC Dallas got sold to Roma last year. Seemed like a really good opportunity. There's some partnerships between that ownership and the Hunts. But this has all apparently gone sour for poor Brian when he found out that his coach got fired and nobody other than Jose Mourinho was now his manager, who is not well known for wanting to play the kids, which Brian Reynolds very much is. Until this week in the Europa Conference League against Bodo Glimt, the reigning Norwegian champions, Roma had to travel to Norway, play in essentially freezing cold on a artificial surface. So Jose Mourinho runs out literally his B squad, and they get rolled 6-1. That's not how is that going to play with the Roma fans back in Italy?
I mean, at the end of the day, you do kind of know the place of that competition. But I think it's more for Jose Mourinho and his ego. That was the worst loss of his career.
What?
The worst loss of his coaching career.
Wow.
If you can believe that. He said after the game, "We have a very good team. We don't have a very good squad. Today we didn't play with the team. We played with the squad." That doesn't sound good for Brian.
No, it doesn't, man.
Yeah. If you haven't, we'll find him and tweet them out. If you haven't watched Mourinho's post-game interview, where not only does he say what Daniel just told you, he essentially says, yeah, their first team is way better than my second team.
Yeah. And this is a team from Norway.
And he goes, and it's my fault. I picked them, but I was trying to rotate players, save players from having to play on artificial turf. My guys aren't as good as their guys, which was classic Mourinho, and it's taken him all of, what, about 2 months to get to this point in Roma. So I don't know where that's going to go. When speaking of your Juventus and Weston, what is going on with that guy on that team of late?
Yeah, Weston's doing fine. I mean, he played 90 minutes in the Champions League win at Zenit midweek. Juventus has won, stop me if you've heard this before, under Allegri. They've won their last four games, 1-0. So they're definitely getting back to true Juventus form. And with Weston, look, he's a squad player at Juventus. That's nothing to sniff at. He plays every other game. He starts a few games here or there. He's not scoring goals this year, but I would argue that if the team is set up correctly, you don't really want a guy like Weston McKennie scoring your goals for you.
Right.
You want him holding it down at the back. And yeah, look, He's a squad player at Juventus, which is good enough to be a starting player on the U.S. national team. He's playing. Allegri gave him a vote of confidence this week. He said, yeah, I like Wesson. He's a good player. He's an important player for us. And yeah, there's nothing to worry about with Wesson. I think it's business as usual.
So, Paint, you lived there in Turin working for the club. Paint the scene for us. What is the angst among fans seeing that their team, right now, seventh place last year, not a good year. So it's a year and a quarter that they've not getting the results ultimately that they're used to getting, even though they're in good form lately. What is that town like now, seeing how the team is doing?
You have to remember, this is a transitional period for Juventus. Yes, Bonucci is still there. Yes, Chiellini is still there. But, you know, Barzagli, Marchisio, Buffon, there's so many players. There were seven players that won all, I think it was eight in a row or seven in a row, Scudettos, and most of them are gone. So it's a transitional time, and Ronaldo was a stopgap that really kind of papered over a lot of cracks, and now they're rotating the squad, and they're getting new, younger players in there. They've cleared Ronaldo off the books, which is a huge financial thing for Juventus, and I think next summer you're going to see them active in the market. We've talked about Dusan Vlahovic before. He's not signing a new contract at Fiorentina. He's already said that. I'm sorry, guys. I think he very well could be on his way to Turin this summer. It's just get in the Champions League again this year, and we'll see what happens from there.
All right, I told Andy at the beginning of the show I did consume an entire Serie A game this week, which was Venezia facing our team, hosting Fiorentina, and that was a big result for Venezia. Am I saying that right, Daniel?
Venezia.
Thank you. Which is weird for me because there's a little bit of conflict there because there are two Americans on that team, which is Busio, the former Kansas City kid, and then Tanner Tessman, who, by the way, Venezia won that game, but they did lose today against Sassuolo 3-1.
Yeah.
But Tessman finally got on the field. It's one of those things where when you watch games like these, you are reminded that not all soccer across Europe is exactly like top flight Bundesliga or EPL or watching Inter play Juve. There is a lot of pretty mediocre soccer being played, even the top flights in other leagues, right?
Yeah, it is. And, you know, those games are not going to be anything to write home about. But at the same time, Venezia, look, they're staying alive right now. They're getting their results. You don't have to do a whole lot to stay up. And I would say of the two players, Busio is the one killing it right now. He's, if you look on like who scored ratings, different things like that, many people say he's been their best player this season. And that is significant when you're talking about a player coming over at his age he's 19 years old. He has played every single game, almost 90 minutes in every single game. And he's basically the one creating most of their chances right now. It's great to see as a national team fan. I think he's still flying a little bit under the radar and he's playing great for them. It's awesome to see. Tessman did get in the game today. You know, he's not playing as much, but there's still time for him.
All right, the great Daniel Robertson with all of his Italian insight.
Daniel, buona giornata.
Grazie mille, ragazzi. Grazie mille. Buona giornata.
All right, Daniel, go catch your plane or whatever it was. Thank you, and hopefully we'll talk to you again in a week or so. All right, thank you, Daniel. When we come back, there are some FIFA bigwigs in our midst, and we'll explain why here next on The Kick Around. The very long-delayed and awaited telling of the story of Andy and Peter road trip to Austin will happen here shortly, so hang out by your radio or streaming device, because that's a special tale to tell.
Did anything happen?
Oh.
We just went to a soccer game.
Did anything happen? Boy, did anything happen. All right, now, we've talked a little Premier League, a little Serie A, a little World Cup, this, that. And related to the idea that maybe World Cups soon may be happening, not every 4 years, but every 2 years.
I don't know why you're against that. We'd have a World Cup kick around every 2 years. That would be awesome.
It would be benefiting to us personally because we enjoy doing World Cup kick around.
Look, I'm telling you, an NCAA
style. They're not going to do it your way.
64-team tournament every two teams would be awesome.
Andy, I agree with you, but that's not what they're going to do.
You don't know what they're going to do.
They're going to cram up our butts that thing.
You don't know.
No, they're not going to do that. Now,
maybe we can write a manifesto.
I also realize I should probably check my words on the public radio broadcast, because in our listening in our area right now are how many of them, Andy? How many FIFA bigwigs are floating around the Dallas-Fort Worth area as I speak in this moment? One, two, 100?
Couple dozen.
A couple dozen people of different nationalities and powerful positions.
Yes,
do they all wear the same suit.
It is the official site visit for the 2026 World Cup.
Okay, so let's set the table a little bit. All right, so don't forget that the United States, Mexico, and Canada have won the right to host the World Cup in 2026.
Right,
summertime, not winter. And what the FIFA Confederation is in the midst of is trying to decide. They get to decide, not the United States, not Mexico, not Canada, which facilities, which cities will get to host games. And in Dallas's specific area of interest is which games, like the important big ones, like the final.
Yeah, right. And Dallas is vying, and the North Texas area really is vying to get multiple matches, first round games as well, group play matches as well. But a semifinal or a final, and the broadcast center. I think it's very much the goal of this area to land that as well.
The broadcast center was in Dallas in 94,
correct? It was here in 94. We as a region have a lot of experience. Events, clearly, Super Bowls, right. Final Fours. But we have a lot of experience with World Cup also. The broadcast center was here. We had group round games. We had the best game of that tournament. The right. Brazil-Netherlands quarterfinal match. So there's a lot of experience here locally.
All right. Now, just to also explain, you are actually involved in this group of people locally, which is hosting the FIFA people and putting on this presentation to help convince them which facilities Dallas-Fort Worth has and why this would be a good place to do certain things,
it's
right?
It's the training facilities as well. We want to make it a base camp for national teams. I mean, national teams have to choose base camps when they go play in a World Cup, and so the North Texas area has a lot of options for teams to be based here in the North Texas area.
All right. Now, when they talked about Dallas as a place to play games, obviously there immediately comes to mind multiple venues that could be utilized. And I remember back to the day that the Death Star was being constructed, they always promoted the building of AT&T Stadium as a potential landing place for a World Cup final.
Right.
I guess my question is that the singular location that they would end up, if Dallas got picked, is that the only place games would be played?
Yeah, the official World Cup matches played in this region, they would be played at AT&T Stadium.
And then everything else, like the Cotton Bowl, SMU, Toyota Stadium, would just be training or auxiliary places.
Yes, correct.
All right, so now I think I'm not revealing too much when I kind of pull the curtain back and explain that it appears to me, being a friend of yours for many, many years, your personal stress level over participating in what is happening this weekend.
Yeah, well, I
so
mean,
hold on, let me because if you've ever worked in a job where you have to make a presentation to important people to sell something internally or to a new customer, you know how stressful that is. Andy and his coworkers are actually putting on a presentation. Is it tomorrow?
Tomorrow is when the official Dog and Pony Show happens.
To two dozen FIFA officials to love on the Dallas-Fort Worth area and bring us the best games possible. That's got to be a little bit strenuous.
A lot of people are involved, obviously, in presenting. And it's all through the weekend. They're here through the weekend. There's an event tonight.
You're taking them out drinking.
Right, no. So, yeah, a lot of people are involved in this. A lot of people, all the way up to Mr. Jerry Jones. Because it's his stadium, right? I mean, he's a big part of our presentation. And obviously, the Hunt family and Dan Hunt, being the chairman of the committee, are very much involved in this. And this is a big deal for this area, for the soccer community in this area. It's an important event that we would bring.
It's a tremendous amount of revenue that this stuff brings in. Do you guys have any kind of numbers about that you can share? More than $10?
Yeah, it's obviously in the millions and millions and millions. It's an impactful event, no doubt. Comparable to a Super Bowl. The just the event taking just the North Texas event. You know, I mean, obviously a World Cup it's much bigger than just you know what it brings to one community.
How many total cities will the 2026 World Cup be played in between the three countries? Do you know?
Yes, I don't know exactly, and I think that's to be determined. But I think 20 to 24 is maybe the number of that. But I could be wrong.
Am I right in understanding, or at least my perception is the U.S. will host the vast majority of the markets,
correct.
And Mexico and Canada will get only one or two.
Right,
markets.
Correct. In terms of games, the U.S. will get 70-80% of the games.
Okay.
Of the matches.
And this is also a tournament where the number of teams is expanded as well.
This
will be the first one.
The first one with 48, right.
Which gives you an opportunity to have more markets. So how much is the ability to make yourself available for travel? Like what elements does FIFA really look for when they make a decision about who's not only just going to host games, but may get quarterfinal, semifinal, a final? Like, what are those elements that they look for?
The ability of the host city to host a proper event, be organized, and have experience in doing. And that's why we think this area is the leading candidate. I mean, obviously, the stadium is very important. I mean, it's a showcase event for FIFA. It's much more than just showing an event or hosting an event for those that attend that day, but you're televising it. I mean, the numbers for the World Cup final are staggering. The total eyeballs, 2 billion, mm-hmm. I think. So the ability to have a facility that is modern and that it looks good on television, I mean, those seem like obvious things. But those are ingredients that we have here, and we have the experience, the legacy. There's so many factors in our favor. But, you know, truth be told, there are a lot of other venues in the U.S.
that are
making their case, right?
Newer ones, yeah. Vegas, L.A.,
sure.
I'm thinking is in there.
Yeah.
I'm sure Giants, the place that they play up in New
but
York.
But when you combine facilities, the stadium itself, and the acumen of those that will be putting on the event locally.
Yeah, the experience, yeah.
I don't think you can beat this region.
Right.
You can't.
Because getting the World Cup, just getting the World Cup games here is a big deal. But I don't know if I can impress upon the listener, if Dallas was somehow able to secure the World Cup final to be played in Dallas-Fort Worth, that would be mind-bendingly cool.
Yeah, and I think it's 16 venues that are planned to be used in that World Cup. And it might be 24 right now in play. Maybe
okay.
That's where I'm getting the 24 number, but it seems like it's 16 venues.
If we get the final, will you be able to help me get some tickets?
Score some tickets?
Live broadcast, baby.
Yeah. Could we do the kick around from the World Cup final?
You know, I'll start working it.
Jeez. We'll just we'll set up a car with a cellular connection, jeez. And we'll Zoom it or something like that.
We'll just get a folding table, a nice little, you know.
Well, Andy, I will speak on behalf of all of the soccer-loving P1s to you. Good luck this weekend as you host all of these fantastic people and you brown-nose them and suck up. And
show them what a great region we have for
all
the game.
Last thing, if the P1 is driving around this weekend,
mm-hmm.
should they be on the lookout for a certain group of people that they should be like overly kind and Texas Howdy-ish to?
Yes, right, correct.
Is there any identifying kind of mark that they should be looking for?
Right?
The suits.
The suits.
Okay.
The FIFA suits.
FIFA, like, are they a particular color and a badge?
They're always dark suits.
Dark suits.
You have like a FIFA mobile, like the Pope?
If you see a number of people that look like they're out of place, that's probably FIFA people, and you should go over to them and be
absolutely.
Super, super nice.
We could have some barbecue on hand ready to deliver.
That's right. I'm
and
sure
offer
we'll be,
and offer them Slurpees.
Yeah. Texas hospitality. That's what we're trying to show.
All right. Well, go Andy and crew. Win us a World Cup final. When we come back, we will finally tell the tale of Andy and Peter drive to Austin next year on The Kicker. We have made it to yet another final segment of another episode of The Kick Around. And we will be back, at least if things stay the way they are. We'll be back again for our third straight show in a row next weekend, which also, by the way, we should note, on a sad note, will be the final appearance of one Josh Kerber, who is leaving us after next weekend. So, Josh, next week, assuming we actually get to do the show, we need you to bring your staff shirt so that we can do the ceremonial burning of the staff shirt.
I'm never allowed to wear it again?
We literally have to burn it.
Do I have to bring
you know why
the one that I just got with my initials on it and the one that we got before?
No, just the one with the initials on
it. It's the initials one.
What if I just take a Sharpie and just scribble out the
It has to be burned.
Okay.
Or the rules.
It's all on the website.
Fair enough.
It's when you spin the wheel, that's how we know.
And next week, will you tell us exactly where are you going to another radio station?
I'm starting my own.
You're going to do your own podcast?
I am going to be leaving the radio industry.
You're going to YouTube, aren't you?
I can't,
Twitch?
I can't,
TikTok.
So, well, are you going to become a social media
influencer? Saroy doesn't do his Twitch anymore, so someone's got to fill that void.
He doesn't?
Pick up the slack.
He hasn't done it in a long time.
Did he give up? Did he just get bored with it?
They're always doing the breaks on Collectible Network.
All the cards got his time tied up.
All right, so I'm burning a bit of time here, Andy, because one of the things that I forgot to do that I wanted to do, because today is the day we finally get around to telling the sad tale of...
It was not sad. Come on, not sad. It was a tale.
Okay, well, it had sad
moments.
It's an
interesting tale. Not sad, just some semi-stressful moments.
Several weeks ago, Andy and I decided, because a good P1 was willing to give us access to their season tickets at the new Q2 Stadium in Austin, Texas, home of Austin FC.
Right.
And we gladly said, hey, that's right. And then Andy had to internally debate whether or not he wanted to go on a road trip with me and eventually decided he could probably figure out how to do that.
Yes.
And he could handle it.
I decided that the beating was worth going out to this new stadium and checking it out because of all the things that were being said about it.
Right. And I don't take that personally at all in any way.
No,
but anyway,
because part of it was because you said that you would volunteer to drive. I'm like, great. You can drive.
Right.
You know, we're going to drive your car. You know, your car's fine. It's a fine car. I've seen your car. We're going to drive your car. And we're going to have a road trip, and I'm just going to sit back and relax.
Yes. And in the middle of that, my wife and I had sold her car because we were anticipating the purchase of a new one, but then it was delayed. But we sold her car faster than we anticipated, and I didn't want to drive my car to Austin because it's a little two-door sports car, and that would have been a beating.
Oh, so you were going to show up in your wife's car. Okay, but still, it was going to be you were going to bring one of your vehicles to my house, pick me up, and go. Okay.
So I decided to spend the money to rent a car to drive to Austin.
Right.
Thank God I rented a car to drive to Austin.
Or are you thankful?
Yeah, because part of the reason why I didn't want to drive my car was exactly what ended up happening to you and I on the way down to Austin.
So he pulls up, you pull up to my house in this highly modern, I even forget the brand.
It was a Ford Explorer.
Ford Explorer with all the bells and whistles.
Boy, did it.
Like, literally all the bells and it's like when you go rent a car and you go up to the counter and you say, I want an SUV and I want a low mileage SUV and I want the one that has all
the features.
The features.
I don't know how I got this thing. It was the craziest deal.
Dropped a big bag on them.
I did. Now, luckily for me, my wife has a ton of mileage with this particular rental
company.
She's
like one of those VIPs, right?
Yeah, okay. She's got a high level because she travels for business and rents from them all the time. I'm not going to say who it is, and you'll understand why here shortly.
So we are now in this very modern...
Ventilated seats, automatic cruise control.
SUV on a VIP account. And all this is important for the story. We are on a VIP account in this rental, right?
Yep.
But... before we can even hit the highway and drive to Austin and have some fun in this thing, he's got to stop and get a Slurpee.
Well, I wanted a Slurpee for the road. What's wrong with that?
Did Cash buy this one?
No, I bought my own Slurpee because I wanted a large one.
And he's like, hey, we have to stop at a convenience store first, like a 7-Eleven. We got to stop at a 7-Eleven. And I'm like, well, there's another one around the corner. He goes, no, it has to be a 7-Eleven. I'm like, do you want a Slurpee? Is it Slurpee you want?
Yes. I want a Slurpee. So I got my Coke and Cherry Slurpee. We get in the car, and we proceed to start going down 35. Now, as I will tell later in this story, it turns out that Andy and I possess very, very different driving styles, which is not a good or a bad thing, but now that I know what I know, after the fact, I'm very worried that Andy was very frustrated with how I progress down highways versus how Andy chooses to drive.
There's way that senior citizens drive, and then there's ways that us normal people drive.
I am not a senior citizen driver.
No, but you're very methodical.
I am not a Grand Theft Auto driver either.
You're very methodical.
Like you, sir.
Very methodical. You know, and at the end of the day, it's fine. We're in this decked out SUV, so I'm okay. I'm enjoying life on the road.
Just taking a nap.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. With Peter, I'm on social media.
And you're having am I whipping you?
It's pleasant. It's pleasant. But at some point, Peter says, I got to stop and get some food.
And I also had to pee.
Right. So he wants a particular burger chain, which we are all big fans of. And I said, I've done this trip before. I'm like, there's one at this exit, but it's on the other side of the highway.
Right.
And he's like, no, I will not exit and go across.
You don't do
the
that.
That's good policy.
Go over the highway.
Only stay on the restaurants or the bathrooms on the same direction
you're
side
right
of the road
one.
You're on.
Stand
but at the
ground,
same
Peter.
Time, he wanted this particular brand. So
we went to another town.
Yes.
And I almost missed the exit.
Right, and this is
because
key.
It came up quick, and yes. So I kind of shortcut the exit, but it didn't seem to do anything. And so we ended up, the way that the restaurants are lined up, there's a sandwich shop next to the burger place we wanted to go to, but because of the way the exit lands, you ended up parking in the parking lot for the sandwich shop. Now, this is important, okay? So we park in the sandwich shop parking lot, get out of the car, and walk literally 50 feet across another parking lot into our burger place. How long are we in the burger place, Andy? 10 minutes?
In fact, no, not even that, because you went to the bathroom and they had issues with the register and we decided to bolt and not get the burgers.
That's right.
So 2 minutes?
So
3 minutes?
What about 3 hours?
Not that long. Not that long, Jake. So we get back in the truck, we start it, and we start to leave the parking lot, and immediately this ding, 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 ding. And I'm like, did somebody forget to close the door? And I look, and the dreaded tire pressure system monitor warning light has come on.
So
now, wait, hold on. This is one of those fancy ones where it actually will tell you which tire it is and how much pressure in it. So I'm seeing 35, 35, 35, and 21.
Uh-oh.
So he starts freaking out. He's like, this is terrible. We have a flat tire, emergency, code red. We must pull off now. And I'm like, dude, just keep going down. I mean, if it's 21, we can still get to Austin. It'll be okay. Just slow down from going 58 to 55.
So in the midst of getting out of the parking lot and driving maybe 100 yards down the road, it's gone from 21 to 15. And I think we need to we immediately turn the corner and find a gap, one of those quarter operated air pumps.
Yeah.
In the middle of filling up the front passenger side tire, I go back into the car to check the pressure, and I notice that the rear passenger tire is also losing air quickly.
That's two flat tires for those that needed us to count for.
Not one, but two flat tires, and they are not holding air. So we overinflate them to like 45 PSI
right.
And say, I wonder if they'll hold how far we can get.
We're 30 minutes from Austin? Not too far.
Not too far.
And this is why we thought, let's overinflate them and make a mad dash for it, right? Easy. Easy peasy in our
all right, we're really going too long right, here. But okay. Long story short, we only get about maybe a quarter of a mile before they start to flat. We end up pulling into a gas station, a big truck stop gas station in what was the name of the town?
I don't remember.
It's literally 40 minutes north of Austin. And it's a brand new semi-truck. And a convenience store. We park, and within 15 minutes, those two tires are completely flat.
So the plan didn't work.
No. We call the emergency roadside assistance number, sit on hold for what feels like an eternity. We're told, by the way, Buzz and his wife were also meeting in Austin. We call them. They offer to come pick us up because we're only 40 minutes north. Luckily for us,
yep.
Because the car dealer, the rental car place tells me, and I go, they go, don't worry, just leave the car there. What do I do with the keys? You just leave them on the passenger floorboard and leave one door unlocked. Okay.
That sounds risky as hell.
Okay. Well, who's taking the car? It's got two flat tires.
That's true.
And they tell us this whole story about what they're going to do with the truck. Long story short, Buzz comes and gets us. We make it to the hotel. We end up going to the FC Dallas Austin game. It was fantastic. A great time. That stadium is great. Austin's got a cool atmosphere going
on. Pepe scored 80 goals.
Pepe scored a million goals and now is going to make Dan and Clark Hunt $20 million, that whole thing. But then after the game, my phone rings and it's the car service or the car rental place. And they're like, hey, we're calling to check in on the status of the car.
Where's the car?
What do you mean? Well, we haven't picked up the car. What do you mean you haven't picked up the car?
That's your problem, not mine.
They never went and got the truck. Andy and I panic. We go to the airport.
Thank you, Buzz, once again.
Buzz takes us to the airport where the person at the counter tells us, because you don't have possession of the car you rented, we can't rent you another car.
Good God. What a mess.
Now, that's when I lost it.
If you ever want to watch Andy Swift go into haughty, I expect to be treated properly
customer
consumer.
Service Andy.
We're on a VIP account. Come on.
He immediately spins. He gets in a huff. It was so awesome. He gets really, like, to the point where he can tell that he's treating this person almost not quite right, but he doesn't want to. Didn't yell, and she was trying to be very nice. He literally spun on his heels and left the scene, only to come back minutes later with a rental car from a different company.
You went and got another one?
Yes. Well, how else were we going to get home?
He was cheating on the rental company.
It turns out, I thought I was getting a competitor rental car.
They're owned by the same company.
Good job.
Yeah. So we ended up giving their money back.
Yeah.
So somehow, long story short, we made it all the way back home the next day. Andy's driving this time.
It was a fun ride back.
Andy drives like a 14-year-old teenager
Andy does? Andy stops and gets delicious kolaches, too, which you've never had, right?
Yeah, those were good.
I
thought I was going to die on the way up there because Andy is I did not know Andy drove like that. I'm not saying he's unsafe.
He's very aggressive.
You said he
thought you were going to die. No, I just get from A to B quickly.
Andy's one of those guys who's been listening to Junior Miller too much about people hanging out in the left lane, so he passes people on the right lane.
They shouldn't be going 50 on the fast lane.
Also true. He's right.
Anyway, we got home quickly.
We did.
We had kolaches.
Is the truck still at the gas station?
They finally went and picked up the truck, and then the company had the audacity to charge us not only the amount for the car, but because the car wasn't delivered back to where we picked it up, they charged us for mileage.
How did they think that you were going to get it back?
I don't know. And lo and behold, boy, did I write a stern letter to the UIL.
Oh, here's customer service Peter now.
Oh.
Right? Exactly.
I wrote a very, very stern letter to the ownership and business partners and the leadership.
So you actually paid it?
Well, they charged our card is what they did.
Right.
And then after I wrote the letter, we conveniently got all that money refunded to us.
I wouldn't have written the letter. I would have made a scene.
Well, there was no scene to make. I was at home when they charged my car.
A digital scene.
We didn't know any of this until literally
days. Phone call and yelling at somebody.
No, I have access, luckily for me, to email addresses of people who are in positions of power in different companies, and I use that to my advantage.
That's literally
15 different people at this particular rental company a sternly worded letter.
Oh, they saw you come in then. They're like, here's that guy. You are that guy.
And then I got some sort of executive customer assistance person that called me the next day.
To apologize. Banner of flames, stirrer of poop, starter of fires, builder of narrative.
But the game was fantastic. The atmosphere was awesome. Thank you, P1 friend of Peter's, for allowing us to attend.
We didn't talk at all about the game or that experience, but that is a really good scene down in Austin. And if you have a chance to go see a game down there, you absolutely should. Now, I know we're running late, but I do have to ask you this question because this seems to be an area of controversy.
Mm.
The blinking LED stadium lights that also not only turn on and off during goal celebrations, but can also change color.
Mm-hmm.
Are you pro or con on that?
Are those the lights they use to turn the the stadium green at certain times. Yes, I'm very pro.
All right. See, there are people in our midst who think that is a janky bit.
Is that you?
No, I think it's fantastic. No, I love bits. Yeah,
their atmosphere is great.
I love bits. Yeah. I think it's fantastic. There are people who think that soccer games should be this thing where just the people and the fans make the atmosphere.
Look, every stadium should have its unique personality, characteristic, and that stadium certainly does. And it's very Austin as well.
It is. It's in a weird spot in Austin.
But it's very Austin in terms of the... Yeah,
yeah. Yeah. Right. Their supporter section is unbelievably good. I don't care how it got created. Frankly, it is great. It's a great scene. And two other teams in Texas should take notes, like really, really good notes.
We'll see, though, in 3 years if they're still doing
Austin continues to be as bad on the field as they are this year, it will be interesting to see if the fan base is still in this kind of form.
That's the true test.
That is the true test, because there are teams that have continued to be pretty good and can't get a fan base at all to save their life. So I guess time will tell. All right, Jacob, thank you for doing Tickers today. Much appreciated. Sam, it's good to see you again, sir. I hope your time off was good last week. You had a nice little travel. Sorry about your Everton. And Josh, one down, one to go, sir.
Sad day.
It will be next week. It will be a sad day because now we got to break in a new board up. All right, P1s, we love and adore you. Don't forget to go on out there this beautiful weekend. Say hello to FIFA people. Get stuck in and win your 50s. Andy and I are going through menopause.
Broadcasting live from the TXU Energy Mothership at Victory Park, hard by the AAC. This is Sports Radio 96.7 and 1310, The Ticket. KTCK AM, Dallas-Fort Worth. KTCK FM, Flower Mound. A Cumulus Media Station.